This is Game Time AM. Now, back to Brad Lee and Jeff Jones from St. Louis Game Time on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Good morning, St. Louis. A little bit of organ music coming back from Jeremy Boyer of the Blues playing at Scott Trade Center. Of course, not playing at Scott Trade Center now because the Blues are not at home. He sent that stuff in and sent a number of songs, and we've been playing a sampling of those when we come back from break here on Game Time AM. I'm Brad. That's Jeff. Matt is getting our next guest lined up, so we have a couple of housekeeping duties here. So this hour is sponsored by our friend Mark Gretschmill from beautiful San Francisco, California. He's a documentary film producer, TV documentary producer, who did not want his legacy to be a Lindsay Lohan documentary, which I find hilarious. He decided that he wanted to do a film based on one of his loves growing up, the California Golden Seals. And if you go on iTunes, you can find the film The California Golden Seals Story, chronicling the, nine and a half year history of the Oakland Seals, the California Golden Seals, and all of the weird things that happened. We had him on yesterday. If you did not listen to the second segment from yesterday's Game Time AM, go on InsideSTL.com, find that segment. We had 25 minutes talking about the weird and wild history of the Seals and how they had a streaker that they arranged to have on the ice. And Mark was at that game as a youngster, and that was one of his most endearing memories of the Seals, one of the crazy moments that Charlie Finley cooked up as the owner trying to get attention for the Seals. I think later today on stlouisgametime.com, I think I'm going to put together a best of audio clips story. So if you've missed anything over the week and you want a sampling of what we've had on the radio show, that interview is definitely going to make it on there, along with we also had Louis III, one of the third Louis mascot for the Blues, giving us the inside mascot scoop and what the mascot lifestyle's of. But we had Mark on yesterday telling all those stories, and great to listen to that. The movie is compelling. It has a lot of former players, including Wayne Gretzky, and how he was actually a Seals fan growing up. So if you find them on iTunes, The California Golden Seals Story, I highly recommend it. Check it out. The Seals were one of the teams that came into the league at the same time as the Blues when the NHL expanded in 1967. And there are some crossover stories between the Blues and the Seals back in those early days of the Blues here in the NHL. So check it out on iTunes, The California Golden Seal Story. Jeff, you want to introduce our guest who's on the line?
Yes, indeed. We have Hannah Beavis of the Ice Garden. That's SB Nation's blog that covers women's hockey. Big weekend for women's hockey with the Frozen Four coming here to St. Louis to the Family Arena in St. Charles. I think there are plenty of tickets still available, so you should definitely come check that out. I know it's relatively affordable as well, so good way to bring the fam out and see some pretty good hockey this weekend. I have that going on. We have the big controversy with the women's national team boycotting the World Championships here in about a month in Michigan. So, Hannah, good morning, and how's the last day been for you?
Busy. I think I got about 4 hours of sleep last night, and I've been going pretty much nonstop since yesterday at 9 a.m.
So you were also up watching. Crazy. You were up watching the Blues and Ducks as well last night.
Yes, that's why. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so walk us through the controversy, I guess, between the USA Women's Hockey Team and Team USA. I know. Yesterday, there was the announcement that came from Team Captain Megan Duggan, and then there was an article from Julie Foudy, who was a former U.S. women's soccer player, and wrote an article for ESPN.com. So that came out. There was a response from USA Hockey. There was a response to the response. So briefly, just outline for us the situation there.
Yeah. So yesterday morning, ESPN kind of broke the news that the USA women's hockey team would not be attending the Women's World Championships, which is basically the Olympics for the women's national team in non-Olympic years. It's the biggest international contest, and this one's made doubly important, or triply important, I guess, because one, it's the year before an Olympic year, so it's the last time the team has the world tournament before they'll go to Pyeongchang. And then also, it's on home soil. It's in Plymouth, Michigan, which is one of the last times in the last several years that they'll be playing on home ice, or they would be playing on home ice if they were playing at all. But yesterday around 9 a.m., the entire team tweeted out a prepared statement that they had all made together about how they would not be participating in the 2017 World Championships because of stalled negotiations with U.S. Hockey that have been ongoing for over a year now, and that they're looking to kind of work together with USA Hockey to have equitable wages and have
they were looking for more support, right? There was a conversation about a women's development program as well as sort of more tangible support for training stuff, right? Especially in the off years.
Yeah, I'm looking at the statements they tweeted out specifically, and it says they want to have fair treatment from USA Hockey to initiate the appropriate steps to correct the outlined issues and to move forward with a shared goal of promoting and growing girls and women in our sport while representing the United States. So it's not just looking for fair wages specifically, which is, I think, a lot of people have picked up on the issue, but they want, you know, more support from the marketing side of things from USA Hockey. They want and they're looking specifically too for a 4-year contract, because one of the big things that they're getting is, you know, they have some support from U.S. Hockey for 6 months leading up to the Olympics. The numbers at this point, they get about $1,000 a month for the 6 months per month for the 6 months leading up to the USA Olympics. But in the 3.5 years between then and the next Olympic cycle, they don't get any support from USA Hockey. They do get some from USOC, which is a separate entity.
Right.
But professional athletes already get that. So they're looking to be basically treated as employees by USA Hockey, which USA Hockey responded yesterday after this whole thing got out. And they said, you know, well, we don't treat our employees, or we don't want to hire employees. That's not our goal.
Right, I think they said they don't employ hockey players, right? I think was the language they used in the statement.
Yeah, which is not at all what the women's team was hoping they were saying. So it doesn't really seem like we've moved forward from
Hannah, it seems
12
like
hours since this is broken.
Hannah, it seems like this kind of follows in the footsteps of the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team, where they spoke out. I think was it last year, where they said, you know, the men's team isn't as successful as us, and they get much better facilities, they get more pay, they get better travel, per diem, you know, just better treatment overall because it's the men's team versus the women's team. Now, I know that, you know, the women's team and women's hockey in general is still trying to kind of break through a little bit and get more exposure, more fan support, and I think it's easy to say that the men's team has more support, more exposure, and all that. I guess it comes down to a question of equity. Doesn't it make sense to treat both teams more fairly? Or what's your take on how each team should be treated in comparison to each other?
Yeah, equity is the buzzword, I think, that's kind of surrounding this whole thing. That's something that the lawyers that are representing USA Hockey, which are the same lawyers that are representing USA Soccer in the past, have really focused on. And, yeah, I think definitely people who are following this, and myself included, think that both teams should be treated equitably. The USA Hockey right now puts in $3.5 million in development for the men's team at the national development level. And that number is zero for the women's team. There's not an equal or comparable team or investment that's being made at the women and girls level. So, I mean, just from that stat alone, we're not getting the same kind of investment on the women's side of things, which is something that the women's team is looking for. So that's just one example of the ways that USA Hockey, that they're hoping that they can invest so that we start seeing more support and more investment in the women's team.
Hannah, I know that something that you and I had talked about yesterday briefly and I wanted to go over this morning is the challenge of what to do with amateur athletes who play on the women's senior team. So there are four players playing in the Frozen Four this weekend. that are on, or that ostensibly would be on, I guess, the U.S. women's national team. Kelly Flanagan and Megan Keller for BC, and Lee Steckline and Kelly Panic for Minnesota. Is there a concern, I guess, that a compensation package from USA Hockey or that increased support from there could create challenges with the NCAA?
Yes, there is for now. And actually, the lawyers that are representing the U.S. women's national team are only representing the postgraduates at the moment. So technically, the college players who were named world team as of right now are not being represented.
Which I wanted to pause right there because we talked about that yesterday as well. But I think it's interesting because, as you know, we sort of reached out to Minnesota yesterday, and their response was to direct to the attorneys involved with the women's team. And if they're not representing the amateur players, it was curious to me that would be the case.
Mm-hmm. I think this is something where it's more of a technicality than anything, just because their season will be over after this weekend, the Frozen Fours this weekend. The team will be a national championship, and then they'll be done playing for their college teams. And we've seen this in the NWHL and the Professional League in the United States, where college players who are done with their seasons have signed with professional teams and are getting paid because their seasons are over. So I think once their seasons are over, they'll kind of step in and be represented in the same way as the players who have graduated and who are on the national team, because they've tweeted out, and not specifically the statement that players on the national team did yesterday because of NCAA technicalities, but they've tweeted their support. They're standing behind the U.S. team, and that they are, and we've heard from the national team players like Monique Lammerer that they're standing behind the team. They have their full support.
All right. You are listening to Game Time AM on 590 The Fan in St. Louis, 105.7 HD2, streaming live on InsideSTL.com. We have Hannah Beavis from the Ice Garden at SB Nation here talking women's hockey this morning. The Frozen Four is in St. Charles this weekend. The four teams you have around, you have Minnesota, Wisconsin, Boston College, and Clarkson. The same four teams, in fact, that were in the Frozen Four last year. Of those four, does any one of the four teams stand out to you as a favorite for this weekend? Who should fans be having their eyes on?
It's going to be really hard to beat Wisconsin. They are having a phenomenal year, and thanks mostly to Anne-Renee Debian, who's in net, who's just having a phenomenal season. She's one of the three finalists for the Patty Kazmaier Award, which is the top award for a collegiate women's hockey player, basically the MVP award. They beat Robert Morris 7-0 in the quarterfinal, so they are on the roll, and they're the top seed of the tournament for the first time since 2012. It's going to be difficult to stop them.
So if you were looking at a team beyond Wisconsin, what would have to happen this weekend, I guess, in order for Wisconsin to be stopped?
Well, they're playing Boston College in the first round, and Boston College is 0-4 against the WCHA. So in order for Wisconsin to be stopped, I think BC's goalie, or whoever they play in the final, either Minnesota or Clarkson, the goalie would have to stand on their head. Really, I think the key to stopping Wisconsin is limiting their scoring opportunities, because they're so deep, and Anne-Renee again is so strong in net that if you're going to win against them, you're going to have to limit them to one or two goals, because that's probably how many goals you're going to score against them.
So if we have listeners that are coming out this weekend, getting excited to watch these hockey games here at the Family Arena in St. Charles, what should they be looking at in terms of differences strategy-wise, game flow-wise, from the men's game? I know, obviously, without full checking, it's a somewhat different game, but what would you say sort of highlights the differences in the women's game?
I mean, yeah, the thing that you'll hear most often from women who play hockey is that the difference with the net checking is that the women's teams are a little more strategic, that there's a little more, they keep their heads up, they look for a good pass, and they have to, for goalies especially, they have to pay more attention, because it's not like you can just go up and run somebody over and get the puck. So it's a little more strategic, a little more fast-paced. But it's going to be a good game. There's a lot of good teams in this Frozen Four. So,
right on. So they they tell me I'll be there covering the tournament for the Ice Garden this weekend. They tell me that I apparently get to vote on the all tournament team, which is a little intimidating.
Pressure packed.
Yeah. So aside from Andrew Nadabian playing for Wisconsin, if you were going to fill out your pre tournament all tournament team, who are the other players that you think really stand out in this tournament?
Haley Mercer from Clarkson is another. Patty Kazmaier, top three nominee, so she's definitely on my ballot. And honestly, I mean, I can't not put Amory Debian on as my goalie, but BC's goaltender, Katie Burt, had a really good game against a really good St. Lawrence team in the quarterfinals. Megan Keller is a defender for Boston College who I probably have to consider. She's one of the top defenders in the world, I'd say, right now in college, and was really surprised she wasn't in the Patty Kazmaier finals. Annie Pankowski is a forward for Wisconsin. Sarah Nurse is a forward for Wisconsin, who's really good. Those are probably my... Sarah Potomac from Minnesota is a forward. Those are probably my top picks. But it'll be interesting to see, I think, based on what happens this weekend, is going to definitely play a role on who you should pick. So we'll see what happens.
For sure. All right, you are listening to Game Time AM on 590 The Fan in St. Louis. We have Hannah Beavis from the Ice Garden talking NCAA Frozen Four women's hockey here in St. Louis this weekend. Hannah, before we let you go, wanted to know, how do you see ultimately the situation working out between USA Hockey and the women's national team? Because I know USA Hockey said yesterday that they will field a team for the World Championships one way or another. Are there enough players you think willing to cross the picket line, as it were? I mean, will USA Hockey be able to field a competitive team if this has not worked out, or will it be worked out between now and then?
Before yesterday afternoon, when USA released their response, I would have tried to stay optimistic, I think, and said that we would have maybe seen the USA Hockey at Worlds, just because, you know, it's hosted in the United States. They want to have the home team there. They want to have the top home team there. There would have been some kind of compromise to have them play. But after the response where they said, you know, we don't want to employ employees, they're already supporting the women's team, and we will still field the team. And the United States national players were really upset with that response. They tweeted out a response to the response saying that, you know, it was misleading. I don't see how the top USA team, the original national players, make it to Worlds now unless something dramatic happens. And I honestly don't see how they're going to field a team. I don't think they're going to field a team because the USA, Monique Lamoureux, who I talked to yesterday, said, you know, we've talked to every player in the pipeline, in the U.S. national team pipeline, over the last year. And last night, or 2 nights ago now, they had a conference call with all the under-18 players and some of their parents discussing what the boycott was and why they were doing it. So they have the support of every U18 USA player. So they're going to have to go outside, I guess, former Division I players or players who were not in the USA pipeline in the last year, which, I mean, it's U.S. hockey. They're still going to be able to field a competitive team that can compete with some of the teams at Worlds. But, I mean, if you put them up against Canada, they're going to get stomped.
Fair enough. All right. Well, Hannah, thank you so much for getting up and getting on with us this morning. I know it's been a long day for you as well, and then you have the excitement of the Frozen Four this weekend. So thank you again so much for having the honor of being the first repeat guest we've had here on Game Time AM. That's well, chalked it.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the first one. Look, in the 20 shows or so we've had so far, you're the first one we've had twice. So we're maxing out. We're the number one spot for women's ice hockey coverage, definitely in the greater St. Louis area. Hannah, thank you so much. We'll talk to you, I'm sure, throughout the weekend.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Yep.
All right. So, yeah, I do think that response from Team USA or the USA Hockey was pretty much a threat. Like, look, you need to get in line or, you know, we'll just find other people that want to take your spot.
They drew the line in the sand. They said, we will not employ hockey players. I reached out yesterday to the USA Hockey communications director, not shockingly, did not get a response to ask what the compensation looked like on the men's side. Because the argument that I heard on people on Twitter all day yesterday was that the men probably don't get paid either, so why should the women? And obviously the discrepancy there is that the men's senior team is comprised entirely of NHL players.
Right.
And so those are players who are already pulling down full-time salaries
to play hockey. It's the equitable treatment. I think I've mentioned a couple times I went to Truman State. There was a Title IX lawsuit that was filed by the volleyball coach at the time, I think my senior year in 1997, where it basically said there were times where they had a really nice charter bus, and then there was kind of a smaller bus that was nice, but it wasn't nearly as big as the charter bus that was owned by the university. And there were times where the volleyball team had the charter bus, and the men's basketball team or another men's team needed the charter bus, and they actually had to go back to Kirksville and switch buses and go back out on the smaller, less comfortable bus.
Yeah.
And the kind of hotel you're staying in, the food, the off-ice treatment, you know, it all comes together where I think you could definitely say if you're part of the women's team, hey, look, we get second-class treatment in every aspect off the ice. The pay is obviously a big issue, because to be a professional hockey player on the women's side, you're going to need something so that you can make it viable for yourself, that you can support yourself.
Yeah, there were some things yesterday that, you know, when you read like the laundry list of complaints, some of them were a little question. Like there were some people that were complaining that USA Hockey did not retweet their players on International Women's Day, which, I mean, whatever. I understand. But there are also things that I think are tangible issues with the discrepancy. So, for example, the most recent Olympic hockey jerseys, I guess, had on the inside, if you've seen, you know, the new Blues jerseys, for example, have the established 1967 on the inside of the neck. I guess the Olympic jerseys had those enlisted the gold medal years.
For men,
but not women. Did not include, but the women's jerseys had the men's years on
right,
the neck.
Right.
But the women's gold medals were not included.
It's actually on the sleeve.
Or the sleeve. So, but I mean, that's weird. That is a tangible demonstration of disrespect for the women's program. And the women's hockey program in the U.S., I mean, is a substantial program. You know, I told this story on Twitter yesterday. I went on a vacation with family to Colorado, and I think it was the summer of 2000. And we went to the Olympic training facility in Colorado Springs. And there's, you know, a pretty big gift shop there with all sorts of Olympic stuff for you to buy and take home. And the one thing that I was really excited about was a hockey stick that was, it was commemorative of the 98 women's Olympic gold medal in Nagano. And it had, you know, the stamp signatures from all the players and the roster kind of listed around it. And that was as a 13-year-old boy who liked hockey. And I was interested in that women's team because that's a gold medal winning USA championship team. They beat Canada. I mean,
yeah. And if you had asked me 8 years ago, 10 years ago, would I ever be interested in watching a women's U.S. national soccer team or the women's World Cup that was happening a couple years ago, I would have said there's no way I'd ever be interested in that. And you know what? The women's national team got to the point where they had personality. They had some star players. They had some exciting games. They had some rivalries.
I think got to the point where it was where they showed us that those. I think they always had those things. They got to the point where they showed us those things.
It got to the point where they had the exposure and the fan interest. And they, you know, it didn't happen overnight. You know, there was the big moment in the Rose Bowl in that, you know, the penalty goal kick, and Brandi Chastain takes her shirt off and she's got the sports bra and she's celebrating on the cover of Sports Illustrated. And that was kind of a seminal moment where women's soccer had arrived. Women's hockey hasn't had that moment yet, but it's not. I'm not saying that it's not going to happen.
Right.
It very well could.
Yeah,
they have to get the chance.
They have to get the chance. That is the tail wagging dog part of this argument, is that eventually, if you provide the exposure, people will have the opportunity to see the team and get excited about it. And you know, the force of nationalism is strong. If it's an Olympic year or if it's even a world championship, people root for the laundry. And frankly, the U.S. women are more dominant in nearly every sport than the U.S. men. It's more exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, you're listening to Game Time AM here on 590 The Fan, KFNS, St. Louis, 105.7 HD2, streaming live on InsideSCL.com. I'm Brad. That's Jeff over there. Matt's staring at us from across the desk, not really weighing in on women's hockey, but that's okay. So we've got a few other things to talk about before the cast of thousands comes in here for the TMA show at 7 o'clock. So we have a recurring theme, a recurring segment that we have that involves your brother-in-law.
Yes, indeed.
Tell us about Dave and why we mentioned Dave on the show.
Yeah, my brother-in-law, Dave, we've talked about, is an example of a hockey fan who loves the Blues, is passionate about the Blues, but is coming into hockey knowledge as an adult. So for people who are maybe just sort of coming around to the Blues, want to learn more things while still expressing their passion, we do a recurring segment here called Dave Has a Question.
So what's Dave's question?
The question for this week is, it seems like the Blues playing style under Hitchcock didn't fit them. What are the changes to Yo's playing style, and why does it make the team better?
I'll let you start, and I'll see if I agree or disagree with you.
I think that the primary concern with the Hitchcock system is that it was largely inflexible. That Hitchcock had a designed sort of, you know, assortment of plays, as it were, that required a demanding commitment to playing a particular rigid style. And when that was broken away from, you did not see support from the coach, and you saw a sort of breakdown of the system because it was so it required everyone, you know. We hear about the mystical buy-in. It required the universal buy-in. In terms of specific changes to gameplay, the biggest one that I think you've seen in terms of the breakout is under Hitchcock, you would see frequently one defenseman retrieving the puck from the corner and sort of looking up ice for the outlet pass. Now you've seen both defensemen sort of sliding back behind the goal line, which creates another opportunity to go cross ice behind the net. We saw last night, for example, on the terrible turnover from Bomeister that led to the first goal. Pietrangelo was an option behind the net, and Bomeister, you know, didn't take it, but that's why you have that second option for that safer pass. And so that's a place where the team can start and can progress out from there.
One thing that Ken Hitchcock was famous for saying was north-south hockey. He doesn't like east-west. He wants the puck, then wants the player skating north-south, end-to-end. And so if you have that as your primary game plan, your primary philosophy of moving the puck, you're not going to have your defensive pairman back behind the net for a lateral pass. It's going to be, you want to go up the ice, up the ice, up the ice. And, you know, sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. I think when you mentioned that Hitchcock's philosophy and his system was very inflexible, I think the word that comes to mind is rules. There's lots of rules when you play for Ken Hitchcock, that rules about what you can and cannot do. And it's more what you cannot do. There's lots of rules about you don't do this, you don't do that, you certainly don't do this, you certainly don't do that. And, you know, you had guys like TJ Oshie who quietly said, you know what, the preparation that we do, the meetings, the film study, it's all, you know, we cover everything ad nauseum, and everything is dissected to the nth degree. And then we get on the ice and we don't have the freedom to play to our strengths, and we don't have the freedom to be creative offensively, and it really is stifling. I can see that when all your rules are you can't do this, you can't do that.
I've told this story, I think I've told it on the air, if not I'm about to tell it on the air right now, about being in New Jersey for a day where the Blues were playing a game. They played in New York the previous night, and so they did not skate the morning in New Jersey. They just had meetings all day, and I was in the let me humble brag real quick, was in the media room pregame getting dinner, and was in line behind John McClain and Ken Danica, who both played for the Devils for a long time, Devils legends, who now work for the team on the broadcast side. And they were sort of chatting to each other, and they did the Blues skate this morning? And I was behind them, and I was like, no, they just had meetings. And John McClain says, they had to listen to Hitch for an hour this morning, and Ken Danica says, F that, like real long and drawn out. So yeah, that sort of gives you an example of maybe the way that some players saw the Ken Hitchcock system there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Mike Yeo has a system, and he has things that he wants them to do. You know, since he's taken over, the number of odd man rushes and breakaways the Blues have had has increased exponentially. I mean, you go a whole week without seeing a breakaway, and there have been a couple of games where they've had four or five in one game. So.
Yeah, you know, you talk about a guy like Oshie, and you combine that with the sort of Hitchcock north-south philosophy. That can stifle more creative offensive players, because the way that you can create holes in the defense sometimes is to have that lateral movement, is to have that, you know, to have the unexpected passes, to cut back and forth across the ice. That can create more confusion in the opposing defense.
Yeah, absolutely. You're listening to Game Time AM here on 590 The Fan, KFNS St. Louis, 105.7 HD2, InsideSCL.com if you want to stream live, or go back and listen to our first segment where we really broke down the game against the Ducks last night. You know, it's easy to get frustrated with a loss. You know, they had the five losses in a row, and then you have the five wins in a row, and you wonder, okay, how are they going to stop the bleeding this time before they rack up a bunch of losses? I mean, you got to laugh.
Yeah.
Or else you're just going to start screaming at the frustration of, you know, the wins and the losses all, you know, stacked up against each other.
I want to quickly hit a couple of texts, by the way, before we run. Yeah. The first from the Sausage Wheelie text in to say this year's zone D versus man D. That was a part of it as well. The changing over in the defensive coverage and the defensive end. And Stubby Applause texting in, and I think most succinctly summing up the change in the system. Hitchcock system required buy-in. Yo system requires want to.
What was that part again?
It's want to, but I think it's pronounced won't to.
Won't to.
Yeah.
All right. Won't to. That's good. Hey, let's pimp a couple things we got going on with Game Time here. So if you check us out on Facebook or the website, or it's also on the Twitters, what's really cool is when we post a story on our website, stlouisgametime.com, it generates a Facebook post, it generates a Twitter story, Twitter post, and has a link back to it. So we had two of them that went live yesterday afternoon, and we retweeted a couple times during the game last night. So this Saturday night at Hot Shots on Manchester, we're going to have a watch party. The Game Time folks, the website, the paper, the radio show, Game Time Media, all coming together for a watch party at Hot Shots on Manchester. There's going to be drink specials, some free food. There's going to be a ticket giveaway for sweet tickets for an upcoming Blues game.
Can we talk, by the way, about there are so many damn things I have to do or want to do this weekend?
Well, sure.
The watch party is Saturday night. There's a concert Saturday night I want to go to. Artie Lang is in town Saturday night.
What concert?
Andrew McMahon in the Wilderness is playing at Del Mar Hall on Saturday evening.
I had no idea that song Fire Escape?
Yes, Fire Escape.
That song. Okay, so my kids, I got three kids, and you know they've all got devices to play some music, and for some reason, all three of them like to listen to music as they go to sleep, and two of my three kids will put that song on.
Yeah.
And they'll put it on repeat.
Well, let me tell you, your kids have a lot of that because as a 15-year-old partially emo child, I got introduced to Something Corporate when I was in high school.
Wow. Okay.
So same lead singer. So Something Corporate, Jax Mannequin, and now all the way through to the Andrew McMahon in the Wilderness days. So that's been 15 years of people ask me what kind of music I like, and I tell them emotional white guys behind a piano, and that is for that.
Ben,
I mean,
Folds Five.
Ben Folds. I'm big into Ben Folds. I like Billy Joel a lot, even if we're gonna turn back that far. So definitely that, you know. And
so there's too much. So are
that's
you picking,
going on?
Are you picking Lang's? The Game Time watch party? Or are you
so
picking,
I
picking
think
that?
I think I am picking the Game Time watch party because it is a two-night engagement, and he's playing Monday night as well.
Ah,
so I'll take the take the Game Time watch party on Saturday, and then be sleepy on Tuesday morning.
Okay, that's fair. That's a good trade off. Well, what's he going to be doing in St. Louis from Saturday to Monday?
I mean, I don't know. Whatever anybody else does in St. Louis from Saturday to Monday.
You should totally call Del Mar Hall and see if we could get an interview with him like Monday afternoon or
you
something.
You think? I don't know. Does it really go with the... I guess that's true. We should go ahead and work that in.
It's our radio show, whatever
we
want to
talk
about.
Yeah, that's true.
So, hey, if you're free Saturday night, you're looking for something to do, you want to watch the Blues game, some drink specials, free food, ticket giveaway, meet us. I don't know. Have we risen to the point where you want to meet us in person?
You definitely don't want to meet us in person,
but we will
be there.
Yeah.
You can meet us in person.
You can say hi, you can ignore us, whatever.
And
I
should say I was at TMA Live last week, and several listeners were nice enough to introduce themselves and said very nice things and made me feel like a real boy. It was shucks.
That's awesome. All right, other thing I want to promote real quick. So you know, we're a hockey show. It's the two-hour hockey extravaganza, but we realized there are other stuff going on. We had Ryan Fagan from the Sporting News on Tuesday talking about NCAA hoops, and we thought, you know what? Let's illustrate that none of us know anything about college basketball and prove it by having our own bracket challenge.
We have a radio show, and one of the laws of having a radio show is that you have to have a bracket challenge NCAA tournament time.
Totally. So on ESPN.com, sign up for their tournament challenge. Fill out a bracket, and then enter the group. So you go to the private groups, And the name of the private group, it's really creative, Game Time AM. Game Time, two words, and then AM. The password is Jake Allen. All lowercase, one word. The password is Jake Allen. So you get one entry, and we've got prizes. So the first place winner, the person with the most points overall and with the tiebreaker, who finishes first, gets to choose between two pucks. There's the mystery puck from Halloween, signed by Paul Stasny. And then there's a Winter Classic logo, Winter Classic game puck, signed by Ryan Reeves at a Hot Shots event, actually, over in Illinois a couple months ago. And then the second place person gets whatever puck is left. And then whoever finishes last gets a Ty Ratty Halloween puck. And Ty Ratty's signature, it has no basis in English whatsoever. It doesn't even have his number. I mean, it's just a squiggle.
I can find a T, and I can
maybe,
find
if you're being generous,
I can find a lowercase R that kind of blooms off the bottom of the T.
So if you're a Carolina Hurricanes fan, or a Chicago Wolves fan, or a, you know, Ty Ratty in the press box with the Blues fan, then maybe you want to tank and get that puck by being the worst person in the bracket. And you know what? We'll have to make sure that we have the tiebreaker rules in effect, because
right.
Hockey fans filling out a NCAA bracket, we might have several people in contention for that last puck and not the first two pucks.
It's certainly the default. That's
absolutely.
I started to fill out my bracket. I took some of the Ryan Fagan advice into account. The directional Tennessee schools are doing quite well in my bracket for sure. But it turned out pretty chalky. I have 2 1s and 2 2s in my final four.
I'm gonna save my. We can talk brackets on Monday. Ooh. We'll see where everyone is.
Brad doesn't want to give it away because he wants to hold on to those pucks.
I entered. It's our thing, you know. I entered it myself. I mean, we have 57 people in it so far.
Yeah.
Hopefully that's gonna get closer to 100. That'd be awesome. You know, sign up, sign your friends up, sign your kids up. If you want to enter a couple different brackets, just sign your wife up and then yourself, and you got two chances at it, right?
Yeah.
Or your girlfriend or your boyfriend or whatever, you know, we don't
the
judge.
person in your life,
yeah, your significant other,
right?
So we've got about 20 minutes here. We should probably talk a little bit about what's coming up tonight and Saturday on the Blues schedule. So tonight, the Blues are in San Jose, a team I think fans in St. Louis probably know pretty well after the playoffs last year, the conference final series where the Blues were eliminated by the Sharks. Not exactly a good time there. What do you expect tonight? It's, you know, they've had to travel. They played in Anaheim last night, got on a plane, flipped to San Jose. Not a super long flight, but it's definitely getting in kind of late at San Jose. Probably not much of a skate this morning, early this afternoon, whenever they would want to do that.
Yeah,
they might
not
have a skate at all.
Yeah, I doubt they'll be on the ice this morning.
Do you think Carter Hutton gets the starting goal?
According to Darren Pang on the broadcast last night, that is the plan. I doubt that that's going to change. I don't think anything that you saw last night would... The only thing that maybe you saw last night that would cause you to make that change is that Jake Allen is continuing to play well, but I think at this point they want to stick to the script.
If he had gotten a shutout, maybe you flip the script a little bit, but
or if he had given up like 5 in a period and a half, maybe you throw him back in there to
if they had pulled him or something.
Right.
You know, I kind of wondered the two goals that kind of happened were definitely lackadaisical errors that. You know, if Ken Hitchcock is the head coach, he might say, hey, you know what? I want to give a wake-up call to all the guys playing in front of the goaltender. I'm going to pull them and embarrass them. And as soon as the goalie gets to the bench, I'm going to say it's not on you, it's on them.
Yeah.
And then he could have gone back and put Allen back in 2 minutes later. We saw that a couple times last year.
Yes, that reminds that is, in fact, that's one of those things that you heard a lot of praise on the broadcast, maybe. Oh, what a wily move to get a free timeout.
Well, Darren Pang, he experienced that in Chicago, I think.
What a terrible coaching decision to just break up the confidence of your... Like, if there's one thing a goalie does not need after giving up a goal, it's to sit on the bench and stew about it. The reason that you don't put a goalie back in after you pull him is because at that point, you have already shattered his concentration and his confidence for most of the evening.
And then it's if he goes back out and he goes back in... You know, it just looks funny, and you know, goalies already have the spotlight on them as being on an island there in front of the net, and you have them skate back and forth to the bench, and
The home game against Washington, where they lost 7-1 or whatever, they got just smoked.
And they had the carousel. Yeah.
Yeah, they rotated the goalies like 4 times in that game.
Felt like it.
I mean, good night.
It didn't work. It didn't work at all. So, what do you think? Let's go back to the standings here. So, San Jose, they're leading the Pacific Division. They have 91 points. Their record is 42-20-7. Their goal differential in the standings is plus 35.
You know, I noticed yesterday morning and didn't say it for fear of jinx, because I'm a logical and scientifically brained person, that the Blues' goal differential going into the game last night was minus 1. It was minus 1 going in. They're minus 2 now, and they lost by 1 last night.
All right.
It was minus 1 going into yesterday, and I thought if they win a game, their goal differential gets back at least to 0. It would have to, you know, they would have to at least get back to even. And of course, they lost last night, so they're back down to minus 2.
They're the only team in playoff contention in the Western Conference with a negative goal differential. And actually, that mirrors the Eastern Conference. The Islanders are the 8th seed right now. They're the only team with a negative goal differential.
Yeah, the Maple Leafs are 1 point back, and they are at exactly even. But
yeah,
those are the only 3 teams in the NHL that are within spitting distance of the playoffs with a negative or neutral goal differential.
So San Jose's last game was 2 nights ago. They hosted Buffalo. They won 4-1. You know, their last 10, they're 7-2-1. They've won 2 in a row. It's not going to be an easy game, and there might still be some bad blood from the playoffs last year, where San Jose really squashed the Blues at the end of that. And, you know, I think the Blues, after playing 2 7-game series, they were a little winded, didn't have a ton in the tank as that series went on.
Yep.
And, you know, maybe the bad blood is on the Blues' end that they got eliminated, but, you know, maybe San Jose wants to keep showing their dominance over St. Louis. I don't know. That's kind of the motivational part going in. Do you think we'll probably see Martin Jones in net? They've had a couple days off. I would imagine
with
their number one goalie. You know, there's a little bit of history with Joe Thornton and David Perron's concussion and missing 100 games almost. I don't think there are too many fans in St. Louis who like seeing Brent Burns out there. Patrick Marleau's still kicking. That guy seems like he was like an original shark almost at this point.
I think they drafted him in 1997, and so he is nearly literally an original shark. He's within 5 years of being an original shark.
That's crazy. And you know, there's the rumor every year that they're going to trade him. They took the captaincy away a couple years ago. It always seems like they're ready to fall out of favor and move on from him. And he just sticks around. I mean, he's going to play a long time.
Probably. If you lived in the Bay Area for 20 years and you have the money he has and you continue, you know,
why go anywhere else?
Yeah, it would take a lot. It would take a lot, I think, to move me out of there.
So the Blues are in the 8th seed still. They have 77 points. They're 2 back from Nashville. They had 1 game in hand. That was the game last night. And so they missed their opportunity to actually move into the 3rd spot in the Central Division, get out of the wild card standings, get into the division standings, because they have 3 more regulation and overtime wins than Nashville, the first tiebreaker. So they could have been in 3rd place in the Central, and they miffed that. Nashville plays tonight at Washington, so that's not exactly a gimme game for Nashville. That's a tough game.
We should point out as well, so tonight is a big swing for the Blues, because as you point out, they're 2 games behind Nashville, who's going to play a tough game in Washington.
2 points.
Yeah, 2 points, sorry. And they're 4 points ahead of the Kings, who have a home game against Buffalo. So, you know, that's a good matchup for the Kings, for sure.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Blues could come out of this evening, having passed Nashville, because the Blues do hold the tie over the Nashville Predators. So if they were to win, and the Predators were to not secure a point, then the Blues would technically pass Nashville and move into 3rd in the Central Division. But if the Blues lose and the Kings win, then all of a sudden the Kings are back to only 2 points back.
Here's a troubling stat for you. The Blues record away from Scott Trade Center, they have 16 wins, 17 losses, only 1 charity point. 16-17-1 on the road. At home, they're 20-11-4, which is pretty close to tops in the division.
I believe, however, recently the home record has sort of struggled. I'd have to look.
Well,
but
it's the streaky nature of the Blues.
Right, right.
You know, Chicago has 23 home wins. Minnesota has 23 home wins. Nashville has 20. San Jose, Anaheim, both have 23 home wins. Calgary has 20. So the Blues have 20 home wins. So they're right up there with you know, playing well at home. But you look, Minnesota has 20 road wins. Chicago has 21 home or 21 road wins.
While we're going through this, by the way,
yeah,
the Capitals at home are 28-6-1. Yeah. The Penguins at home are 27-4-3.
So the Eastern Conference is a little more dominant, is what you're saying.
Pretty hard to win in those buildings.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think if the Blues get a little lucky, I don't know. I think we kind of predicted that there would be a letdown in one of these two games, either last night or tonight, especially after feeling like that win in Los Angeles gives you some breathing room, gives you a direct win and creates some space, and you're basically masters of your own domain. You're masters of your destiny as far as the Blues controlling where they are in the standings because they beat LA that way.
And we said 3 points in these three games is where you need to be.
And they've got two.
So now they have two, so they have to get a point tonight. And the reason that's important is, like we talked about, LA has a home game against Buffalo. So you can all but add 2 points to the LA column right there. So if the Blues do not get a point this evening, then the Kings are basically one game behind.
Buffalo is 2-6-2 in their last 10.
Yeah, they're bad.
Yeah, and their last loss was, like we said, 4-1 at San Jose.
You were very likely to see noted former Blue Anders Nilsson in goal for Buffalo this evening.
Ooh. Noted former Blue? How about obscure former Blue?
He's tall. You know, I'll dive into random stories of things that I saw at games. The largest person that I have been around this year so far in a locker room is Anders Nilsson. Like, Zdeno Chara is very tall, but he's very wide. He doesn't feel big. Like,
he's lanky.
Yeah. Anders Nilsson is a mountain of a man, especially in goaltending equipment. That is a big dude.
But doesn't necessarily... it proves the point that having a big, fat goalie might not be your best strategy.
Exactly.
So then the Blues are in Arizona on Saturday. Arizona
is bad.
Second worst team in the Western Conference. In their last 10, though, they are 5-4-1, so they're feisty. Yeah. They've won three in a row.
Is Shane Doan still mad?
Probably.
He's, you know what? How mad can you be
living in the desert for so long?
I mean, right. That's what you get, Shane Doan.
Yeah. That's true. Well, Arizona 2 nights ago, they beat the Kings 3-2. I guess the Blues beat the Kings so bad on Monday that on Tuesday they lost to Arizona. So that did not help the Kings situation at all.
And
so then you can't say they're going to go in and take care of Buffalo real easy then either.
No, I mean it's
even though Arizona has been hotter than Buffalo,
right? It is 5-4-1.
It is the NHL. On any given night, you can see any team except the Avalanche could beat any other team on any given night.
If you look at the standings, the teams that are outside the playoff picture, LA, Winnipeg, Vancouver, Dallas, Arizona, Colorado, they all have in their last 10, Vancouver has 2 wins, but everybody else has 4 or 5 wins in the last 10.
Yeah.
So they're all competitive. If you're not ready to play, if you're not focused, if you don't play your game, if you go in expecting an easy game or expecting an easy 2 points, you're going to get embarrassed.
Yeah. Text from the 314 pointing out that he thinks the Blues won in Pittsburgh this year. Indeed, they did. One of the four regulation losses at home for the Pittsburgh Penguins this year.
That was at the end of a pretty ugly streak.
It was a Carter Hutton shutout. Yes, indeed. Go. It was the game that saved Ken Hitchcock for a week.
Yeah, for a week. And it was the first time that the Penguins had been shut out at home since that building opened. So it was a pretty monumental
deal.
It really, I think, was the game that saved Ken Hitchcock, because the next game they played, that was a Tuesday, they played in Minnesota on a Thursday.
And got killed.
But I thought then, because that was the trip I made to Minnesota, and when I was planning that trip ahead of time, it was because I thought that it was going to be the first Mike Yeo game. I thought that they were going to pull a plug on Hitchcock, and then Carter Hutton saved them for a week.
Missed it by that much.
So Pittsburgh, they didn't take the Blues seriously at all at that point, did they?
And then when they came to St. Louis the night before the Super Bowl, they definitely took the Blues seriously.
It was a very different looking game.
And it was not nearly competitive, yeah. So we're wrapping up the show this week. Man, four weeks has flown by. I mean, waking up in the middle of the night,
it
feels like.
4 weeks has flown by. This week was dragging a little. The daylight savings thing.
Yeah.
That had more of an, like, I have never really felt the effects of daylight savings.
But you've never
like
had to wake up
week.
And be on the radio.
Well,
at 5
not yet. Not being there. I've gotten up. Like, the 4 and 5 a.m. alarm thing is not new to me, but on the radio, and the commute at 4 a.m. is new to me. That's
getting in the car and driving. Yeah.
And I did like it better when we could see the building across the parking lot at 7. I got to admit, like,
it's
a little dreary.
The only thing we can see is a light on in a window. Someone's doing some, like, medical billing, I think, early in the morning. So let's see. Why don't we do 3 stars of the week?
Of the week,
we
huh?
We could open up all 4 shows. The 3 stars. Do you have a suggestion?
Does it have to be a previous star throughout the week?
No. Anything you want to mention? I'm personally, I'm going to throw out our spies inside the Blues Lounge on Facebook for throwing us a number of posts.
Okay.
To talk about, because if we didn't have our spies working, if the resistance wasn't real, we wouldn't have that segment, and I pretty much love that segment every day.
Okay.
So third star, our spies inside the Blues Lounge. Thanks for giving us stuff. Keep feeding us information. We won't get you banned, and you can keep giving us stuff, and we can laugh about bad things posted on the Blues Lounge.
I'm going to say second star, Louis III.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the Louis III talk, I have to admit.
I was actually going to name him number one star, but if you want to go two, that's fine.
The number one star has to be Mark Gretschmel. Mark Gretschmel is the number one star. The filmmaker who produced the California Golden Seal story, for producing a wonderful film, for coming on for half an hour with us.
Available on iTunes.
And for giving us money. That makes him the number one star for sure.
He's a sponsor for 3 more weeks, so you're going to hear a lot more about the California Golden Seals and the film, available on iTunes right now. Honorable mention, Ryan Fagan. That conversation was awesome. Talking NCAA hoops, something that's not up our alley really, but man, the knowledge he dropped, defense and scoring and upset specials and, you know, his final 4 picks and the fact that the loser of his family bracket challenge has to wear a full-size pink bunny suit during a 5K race the next year. That was some quality radio.
We should definitely throw out stars to anybody who has come on the show. In general, really, or especially this week, you know, we had Mark, we had Hannah today, we had Louis III, we had Ryan Fagan. It's early in the morning. It is hard to get folks to want to wake up and talk to us.
And even when we try to target folks on the East Coast, like Ryan's in Charlotte, and he called in at 7:30 local time, there have been other people we've approached who have said, "Oh, I'm still asleep at 7:30." So we appreciate anyone who's listening. Calling, texting, tweeting, emailing, direct messaging.
Just anybody who validates our existence is what we really like around here.
Promise, Mom, I have a real radio show.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, we got to get out of here. TMA is going to come in and talk a ton about the new head coach of the University of Missouri college basketball team, Konzo Martin.
Spoiler alert. A member of the TMA cast of thousands earlier this morning said bad hire to us out in the lobby. So
spoiler alert. The hot take bell.
You'll hear that and more.
All right. Well, for Matt Davis, our board operator, thank you, Matt, for another good week. For Jeff Jones, my partner here on this side of the desk, and for myself, Brad, with St. Louis Game Time, appreciate you listening. This has been another Game Time AM. Check us out on Inside SCL. You can podcast any segment this week. Good morning, and here comes TMA here on 590 The Fan, KFNS St. Louis.